After a little bit of a hiatus, I'll spit it out. After a little bit of a hiatus, we are back for episode number 321 of The Parish of the Patriots. For me, this is deja vu. This is the second time it's been installment number 321. As you know, the show didn't get posted last week. And for me, like I say, it's not like I didn't feel like I did the show. There was a whole roughly hour-long show set up, ready to post, Radio Albion. And I just wasn't happy with it. I'm assuming you read the little message I put up in place for the show. I slept on it, recorded it over the weekend, slept on it. And the more I kept grinding on it, the more I'm just like, yeah, I mean, I got a show done. I could go ahead and let it post up and shrug it off and say, yep, got a show. There it is. You want it? You got it. I've always said I'm not going to phone it in. And I kept thinking about it. I'm like, it's phoning it in. I can sit here and basically bring up points I've already brought up before, string it together with some words and make an hour. I can fill an hour. I mean, if you just say, it doesn't matter what you say, sit down here and talk for an hour. I can do that. I don't want to do that. And as I thought about it, I was just like, nope, not going to do it. Going to put the best foot forward. So anyway, we are back. So once again, we're back for number 321, and we're going to keep on trying. And of course, to top it all off, I didn't know it at the time, we wound up not having Dr. Johnson's Daily Nationalist show on Thursday, because if you read that note, he's without electricity, he's without power for a long time. I told him, I'm just like, this is just to get you accustomed to that third world lifestyle. You just can't count on things like reliable power. Well, hopefully this week will be more back to normal. So getting back to our normal routine. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. You can look here on the description page, Radio Album for the show. We do have snail mail, addressing an envelope. It's the easiest thing. I don't know what to tell you. It's easier than cryptocurrency. So there you go. The address is there. Normally we would go into the listener supporter mailbag, but there's nothing in the listener supporter mailbag. But wait, you didn't do the show last week. What about the listener supporter mailbag last week? There was no listener supporter mailbag last week either. But that's okay. We're gonna keep on trucking. Now, I've for a little bit now, I'm loath to discuss politics, and we may get into something unpolitical. But I am going to discuss politics a little bit today, because I do find it interesting how the mask is completely off of the democracy thing now. It starts somewhere. You know, it's not everywhere and on an equal basis. It has to start somewhere, but it tends to grow out. And right now you look in certain countries and the mask is off. The whole charade, the democracy, voting, values of who we are, has some, the idea that this has something to do with you going through a ritual at the ballot box, that is, shall we say, going out the window. It seems like they're losing the idea, and it is possible that this is the case, because a lot of the people running this now are a lot dumber than those who came before them. You know, we get a dumber generation running the system. And it's quite possible that this new moronic generation running the system doesn't actually understand that you have to have legitimacy in the eyes of the people. They apparently seem to think that just with brute force, they can just make everybody go along. This is interesting, because those who came before understood you have to have a form of legitimacy in the eyes of the people. They have to buy into it on a certain level. Even if they don't like it, if they buy into the system as legitimate on a certain level, then you can continue to function. But once you completely lose legitimacy in the eyes of the people, the whole thing will collapse. This has long been understood, but it's quite possible that those who are making these decisions now are just so stupid they don't understand that. They think that it doesn't matter. We can just do whatever. And I guess I can kind of understand where they would come to that, because people are kind of stupid and they'll just go along. They'll just go along with whatever ridiculous narrative they're told. But even for morons, you have to believe that even for morons, there's critical mass for that. And it just becomes so absurd that everybody just walks away. I've seen several stories recently that kind of, I think, highlight this. Of course, we all know about the absolute shit show that the Romanian elections have been. And this has been an ongoing thing for months now. You know, they're trying to rig the election for the pro-EU democracy values of who we are. And then surprisingly, this other guy who's the, they call him, the terms they use are always worthless. You know, he's right wing, but what does that even mean? I'm not going to claim to be an expert on Romanian politics of all things, but from what I have seen, basically the guy is just like a normal quasi, you know, somewhat nationalist leader. Is just like, well, yeah, no, I don't think we should sell our souls to the devil in the EU. And I think it's stupid for a small country like us to make an enemy out of a much larger country like Russia in the hopes that the EU and NATO will somehow protect us. I think maybe we should try to have good relations with everybody and watch out for our own national interests, which is pretty minimalist, quite frankly, but that's enough. And they used the courts to throw out the entire election. When did you start throwing out entire elections? And saying, no, that one doesn't count. We're going to have to do this over again. You got a problem. Now you're just saying, well, y'all aren't voting the way we want you to. This is why normally they just go with vote rigging. Maybe the people in Romania are too damn stupid to figure out how to rig a vote. They need to have people coming over from the U.S. to train them in the proper mannerisms for election theft. I don't know. I've seen memes on the internet that Romanians are, I'm not dissing on you Romanians, but that Romanians are experts at stealing copper wire, but they can't figure out how to steal an election. That doesn't make any sense. So you just throw the election out and say, we didn't get it stolen that time. We got to redo it again. It's nuts. They're throwing journalists out that are showing up to cover the election because, oh, you're a threat to our democracy. They're going overboard with this threat to our democracy, values of who we are thing, to the point that now it's not even becoming plausible. You've got journalists showing up to cover the election. They board the plane as soon as they land and kick them out of the country because the government says they're a threat. You can't come observe and report on our elections. That would be a threat. As if coming in and nullifying the elections, because obviously you didn't get the result you wanted, as if anybody's fooled by that, you know? I guess they actually think people are buying into that. Nobody thinks that's real. It's something, isn't it? Now, you couple with this, I just read just the other day, that the intelligence agency in Germany, they're doing the whole, they just declared that the AfD party is a threat to national security. We've seen what has happened in France with Le Pen's party. They're just apparently we're going ham-handed here. We're just going ham-fisted. And to hell with any idea of legitimacy. You had J.D. Vance going over there and lecturing them about this. And people are like, look at this. The Trump people, they know this is right. No, I think this is a case of some smarter elements in the system are going to these dumber elements in the system and asking them, what the hell are you doing? This is not what you do. You just steal the election and keep it to where you can frame that as legitimate. You don't just go out there and say, piss on everybody. We're throwing it out and doing it over again. We're declaring anybody that's running against the approved parties to be terrorists, a threat to national security. It's pretty obvious what you're doing. The people may be dumb, but they're not that dumb. And when they see this pattern over and over again, they're going to start catching on. And if they just throw up their hands and quit going to the ballot box, it's a problem. You start stripping away the legitimacy. They don't have to cooperate anymore. Oh, they'll cooperate on the surface. They'll cooperate up to the point to keep themselves out of jail. But you can't put everybody in jail. You see, when you lose that legitimacy, people will quit cooperating as much as they can get away with. You can grab some people, make an example out of them, and throw them into prison. That's fine. The others will just say, okay, we can't go that far. They just won't cooperate as much as they can get away with. And then it creeps from there. They do this much and get away with it. But then they do a little more. And you're talking about essentially your entire citizenry. You're not going to throw them all in prison. Always comes back to there's more of the people than they are of these people sitting in these capitals calling these shots. If you ever see the depictions of the Old West and a cattle drive, you know, they would take these humongous herds of cattle, thousands and thousands, and not just any cattle, mind you, longhorn cattle. Now y'all probably realize most of y'all are not cattle people. Let me tell you something. Nobody runs longhorns anymore except just to look at, because they're pretty. They are fractious. The reason they use longhorn, most you go buy a cattle ranch now, and I can guarantee they're going to be some form of cow with no horns, very docile. They round up cattle today. They go out there with a cube feeder and honk the horn on the pickup, and the cattle just follow them like dogs into the pen. They know cattle drives anymore. They use docile cattle now, but back then they used those longhorns. Why? Because the cows were just out there. They were just out there roaming around. And so when they had their calves out there, when coyotes or anything else got after them, they had to be able to fight on their own. They weren't all cozy, pinned up in a cultivated field eating wheat grown for them so they could be fat and happy. They were out there surviving on their own. They had them big horns so they could hook them coyotes. Longhorns are fractious. They're fighter. They're not docile. You see, you watch a movie or depiction you read about, you have these cowboys, and they're moving thousands of these fractious, ready to fight longhorns for hundreds of miles from wherever they've gathered them up to the railhead or whatever, send them to market. And for the most part, they could successfully do that, but they had to just keep moving. They weren't running around going yee-haw, yee-haw, shooting their guns off to make the longhorns go where they want. They were ease them along. You ease the cattle along to keep them going. Look, running these countries is the same damn thing. They got to ease the cattle along. You're the cattle. You are the cattle. We are all the cattle. They're easing us along. Now, you're always going to have one or two that tries to break out of the herd and take off, and that's where they have to run over and shoo them back into the herd. You ease them along. You know what the number one thing that the cowboys back in those days were afraid of, the one thing they feared, was a stampede. Because there's nothing they could do about it. If you had something happen that spread across that herd, a panic, whatever, and the entire herd turned and ran, there's nothing, there's no running in front of them and going, yeah, yeah, and they're going to turn around. You're talking about 5,000 head of fractious, ready to fight you anyway, longhorn cattle moving as a group. You're not going to turn them. All you could do is go with them until they stopped and then start easing them back and hope they didn't go too far before they calmed down. That's it. And heaven forbid, and this is why they feared the stampede, if the cattle took off and you happened to be in their path on your horse, you're screwed. Unless there's enough distance, you're talking thousands of head of cattle. It's not like you can move over 10 feet and miss them. If you were in the way of a stampede, you ain't gonna make it. They're gonna run you right over. It's like that. These governments, if they lose all form of legitimacy, and instead of easing the cattle along where they want them to go, the cattle turn around and run them over. Start moving of their own accord. There's always more of you, just like there's more of them longhorn cattle. There weren't thousands of cowboys. There were a handful of cowboys and thousands of longhorns. If the herd just of its own quits cooperating, they're in trouble. This has been long understood. Like I said, I think it's just morons running it now. And they think they're smarter than what they are. And they think they can just make them go. When you get to a point to a multiple of these democracy countries, you think it's impossible for anybody to notice it? Like it's happening across all. It's like when the whole COVID thing happened and like all of these countries were doing the, like following the same script and nobody was supposed to notice that. When you see in multiple countries, you know, this, oh, the party we don't like, the candidates we don't like are suddenly terrorists now. They're the threat to national security and we have to outlaw them. We have to throw them in prison. I think a lot of that starts when they get away with it on a smaller scale. You know, they get away with it once and they get confident. Well, heck, that was easy. Why didn't we just do that? Why did we play this game? That's probably what lulls them into this kind of stupid action. And again, I think the whole thing of the Trump people coming over and lecturing the Europeans about this, this is just a warning because it's not, you know, we care about the people being represented. That's not it. They're warning them. They're inviting chaos in. The people get so lulled into the system that then the first time that they do, say, for example, Golden Dawn in Greece, they just jailed everybody, just declared them a terror, just declared the political party a terrorist group, threw them in prison, outlawed them, and that was it. And these morons looked at that and said, well, they got away with that. Why have we been messing with people and going to all these great lengths to rig elections and everything else when we could just declare them terrorists and put them in prison and keep on trucking? Why have we been messing with this? It worked in Greece. Why won't it work over and over again? Because that was the first time and people were just kind of so shocked by it. And most people in other countries aren't even aware of it, didn't even see it happening and just kind of took it in stride. But when it starts happening everywhere, then people sit up and start taking notice. It's a trend. It's not a one-off, wow, that's crazy sort of thing. It's a trend. Greece, Germany, Romania, you start seeing France, you start seeing it over and over again. The candidates they don't like are now terrorists. They're a threat to national security. Why are they a threat to national? Well, they have extreme views. They complained about unlimited migrants at one point in time. We can't have that. People are going to, and when it happens in your country, you dang sure are going to sit up and take notice. They're burning down their own legitimacy. Now, I saw recently the Reform Party in Britain. The Reform Party is making some gains. You know, starting to, Nigel's party is starting, is making some headway, gaining some traction. This is a more, what you see with the Reform Party in Britain, this is a more conventional approach to herding the cattle off, trying to steer the stampede a little bit. What you had with the election of the Labour Party in Britain was not, nobody was voting. Well, I mean, there's always some idiots, but you didn't have this overwhelming win for Labour because the people suddenly decided they really liked what everything Labour stood for. They tried to create a narrative, something like that, but that was just stupid. No, people just threw up their hands and gave up. They voted for the Tories forever. The conservatives, they'd voted for them forever, and they never did anything except the long way around of what the Labor Party said they were going to do. How many times did they have Labor candidates saying they were going to stop the migrants from coming? And they never do. They're going to boot the migrants out. They never do. You know, they're going to do this. They're going to do that. And they don't do anything except the same thing the Labor Party does. They just lie about it. You had the Labor Party saying, oh, we're going to do these things you hate. And then the conservatives run and say, we're not going to do the things you hate. And so people would vote for years and years for the Tories. And then the Tories get in there. And what do? Things you hate that the Labor Party said they were going to do. So finally, they throw up their hands and say, well, there's no point in voting for these clowns. Well, as a result, nobody's voting for the Tories. So the Labor Party comes swooping in. The media tries to create this narrative of, oh my gosh, the Labor Party is just suddenly so popular. No, they're not. I called BS on that one when it happened. And now I think you're seeing evidence of this. This whole thing of the Reform Party now is suddenly, you know, I don't want to rain on Nigel's parade here, but it's still party of the system. They've looked at it. This is a more conventional approach. They know the same. If I know, they know. The people weren't going out and vote. That's the narrative they tell morons. The people weren't going out and voting in mass because they suddenly love the Labor Party. People just quit voting for the Tories. They see this lack of legitimacy, so we got to do something. They can't just drag the Tories out for more fake promises and lies. Nobody believes them anymore. So what do? They drag out. Now they've got the Reform Party. See, now it's a new Tory party, basically. This time, you got a party that's actually going to do something. Spoiler alert, they're not going to do anything. This is more just to keep people. This is a more conventional approach of herding the cattle, of not having a stampede. Oh, people can say, this way people have something else. They say, oh, okay, we've given up on voting for the Tories. We already know what Labor is. Now we got something new. Nigel's party, and I can tell you how it'll work. Nothing will come of it, And the Reform Party will say, well, it's just because we don't have enough seats. We got to get more people voting for us. We've made some gains. We've sent a message. But you're going to have to, the next election, you have to vote harder. Because once we get enough of us in here, then you're going to finally see actual reform, actual change in Britain. Again, spoiler alert, that day will never come. I've been on this world a long time. And here in the U.S., I've heard this same story from the Republicans over and 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 over, and over, and over again. You're not going to get anything different. If you just vote harder and we have a majority, the Republicans have a majority in the House, the Senate, and the presidency, man, you're going to see the country turn around. It never happens. Even when they have the majorities, well, we just can't, you know, we would get it done. We're just not there. You need to vote a little harder next time. That's what you're going to get. I'm sorry. I know I'm cynical. If you're sitting there shaking your head going, Dan, you're just cynical. No, I know I'm cynical because I have experience. I've seen this. I'm telling you, this is how it's going to play out. You can keep going and doing the ceremony at the ballot box all you want to. That's your choice. I'm not even telling you not to do that. I'm just telling you, don't get your hopes up. You know, they may give you a few meaningless symbolic things to make you think, yeah, something's really going to happen. My favorite example of the symbolic things is the Republicans in the 90s had their contract with America, and they spelled out promises they were gonna do all these great things, and it worked. People said, okay, y'all have said you're gonna do this, will vote for you. And they won and got in there. And they repealed the 55-mile, the ridiculous 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. That's what we got out of the whole thing, out of all this whole list of promises. They promised to bring it to a vote. They didn't promise it would actually get anywhere. The one thing we got out of that was the ridiculous, because at that time we had this hangover from the 70s, this 55-mile-an-hour national speed limit. And everybody ignored it anyway. Like, literally nobody drove around 55. You can't get anywhere in America driving 55. Nobody did it. Everybody was ignoring it anyway. They just bought radar detectors, and we had this whole system. We still use it sometimes. We had this whole system. If there was a cop ahead, people would be flashing their headlights so you'd know, oh, there's a cop, because everybody knew no one was driving 55. So at the end of the day, what we got out of that was a repeal of a law that pretty much everybody was ignoring anyway. See, symbolic. We got something symbolic out of it. The Reform Party is basically the contract with America, Britain. Irrelevant island nation version is what you're getting. Now, again, I mean, you may get something symbolic out of it, and I guess take what win you can get. But if you think they're going to, how many times do you have to hear it? When you look at it taken as a whole, you know, like, for instance, the AfD party in Germany, really their whole thing, like Le Pen's party in France, is around, we don't want the migrants here, the migrants should leave. You know, there's not even anything like, it's not like AfD is out there saying, we need to put migrants in camps or anything like that. They're saying the migrants should leave. But that is enough for them all to be declared terrorists or whatever. Same thing with France. Same thing everywhere. Anybody that's against bringing in infinity migrants, in other words, as a party, is going to be deemed a terrorist, threat to democracy, values of who we are. And they're going to be outlawed or may be thrown in prison. So we can take from that for whatever reason you want to conjure up, across the board in these democracy countries, migrants are policy, and that's not going to change. They're going to do that whether you like it or not. You know, I mean, that's kind of one of those bottom line. It's across all of these countries. So this is obviously a concerted effort, because you can't deny that that's a common theme throughout Europe and including Britain. Now, if that is a policy of the system, across different countries, not just isolated to one nation, all these different countries have this same policy. We're bringing in the third world to infinity. When one guy pops up and is allowed to get traction and is allowed to, you know, pop their head up without being hammered down and called, you know, a terrorist threat or whatever, and saying, oh, we're going to change that. Are you going to believe that? I'll be the first to say, I know I'm cynical. I don't claim otherwise, but it's because I'm experienced. I've seen this so many times before. I'm just telling you, don't get your hopes up. In Britain, they realize what happened. You know, even though the media was running around trying to sell everybody on the idea that, oh, yeah, no, everybody in Britain loves the Labour Party now. They knew it was bullshit, and I think most people probably knew it was bullshit. And they looked at it a little smarter than these European countries and said, well, we're going to have to do something different. The Tories aren't working anymore, so we're going to have to do something different. So now you're going to have the Reform Party coming up, making some headway. You're just going to have to vote a little harder, but once we get enough Reform Party in there, they're going to reform. It's in their name. They're going to reform it. They're going to change it. This is the conventional approach, what they're doing in Britain with the Reform Party. It's the conventional approach. These morons in places like Romania, Germany, France, they're doing amateur hour. You know, they're doing that. Again, that's why the Americans are coming over there lecturing them about tyranny and they're honoring the democracies. They don't care about that. What they're doing is they're chastising morons, telling them basically, you're fixing to cause a lot of problems. You know, because when it's happening across country, if it breaks in one, if the system collapses in one country, you're liable to start seeing a chain reaction. I think France, just off the top of my head, I'm not an expert. I just make my observations and share them with y'all. When you look at, I think France is a high, is a very high candidate for that collapse to happen, because you look at the entirety of what has happened over the years. For instance, the yellow vest protests and how that happened, how that went down, how unpopular Macron is. And yet he still seems to manage. They had these elections and they didn't like the results. And so they do all of this. Oh, and Germany does the same thing. They do this whole, oh, well, we're going to make this coalition of shitty parties that nobody supports and keep the party that people have been voting for out of any kind of real power. The French, they do have they have that kind of tendency to just, when they snap, they burn everything down. They burn everything down. So France is always a top contender for, if you're going to see somebody break, it could be France. These things can play out any number of ways. I don't see how the EU has a long-term future. I really don't. That thing, they don't even have, the EU doesn't even have the facade of democracy to hide behind. You know, it's just a bureaucracy. Nobody, you know, all of the peoples in these various member states, the population didn't vote for Ursula von der Leyen. They didn't vote for that lunatic Kaja Kallas. These people just are put in there. They don't even have the fig leaf of the democracy to hide behind. I don't see a long term. You've already got member nations like Hungary, for instance, that are like, yeah, no, y'all are lunatics. We're not going to do that. And they scream and wail and gnash their teeth. And then, of course, they do what they always do because they're stupid. Oh, we'll just change the rules. I mean, according to our rules, one country can veto this whole mess. Well, now they're like, oh, we'll change the rules so you can't do that anymore because you're not doing what we want. I don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't see the EU with a long-term future. At some point, it's going to frazzle, and I think it's going to frazzle from the eastern countries, not the lunatic make-believe Baltic states, but some of the more serious countries, like Hungary, for instance. Because at some point in time, these countries that are already members are going to say, "Well, all we're doing is fighting with the EU. What are we actually getting out of this?" You know, they obviously went into it for the money. But now it's just like, well, it's just not worth it, you know, anymore. They fight, and I saw where they're mad at Serbia because they were going to go to Russia's, you know, Victory Day celebration or whatever, and they're threatening them. This will hurt your chance of joining the EU. But at some point in time, these countries that had signed up saying they wanted to be a part of the EU because they thought they were going to get free money are going to go, well, that's not much of a threat. You know, actually, we've thought about it, and we don't think we want to be a part of the EU. You know, like I say, the EU doesn't even have the fig leaf of democracy to hide behind. What is it? I mean, what are you actually, at some point in time, what are you getting? What are you even getting out of the EU? Well, we're just waiting to see. But I just, like I say, the idea of the Reform Party and, you know, oh, this finally starting to turn around in Britain. It's, and don't get me wrong, I'm not even trying to be negative here, because I think this whole democracy sham losing legitimacy in the eyes of the people is actually a good thing. It is. I think it's a good thing. I'm not even being negative. Because as people finally realize this is they're being scammed, then they're going to start demanding something. But the longhorns are going to, they're going to stampede, maybe a slow motion stampede. But when people start realizing it, there's no legitimacy. So why are they doing what these people are telling them? And again, I'm not the only one. This is why the U.S. is going over there and giving them lectures, public lectures about tyranny and respecting the democracy and the will of the people. And you even had Scholz over there going, well, we shouldn't be too quick to outlaw the AfD party, because he's got people whispering in his ear going, hey, y'all are being stupid. This is not the way you do. This is not the way you work the system. Got to keep them. Got to keep the cattle. Got to keep the cattle in line. You got to keep them moving along. I think this loss of legitimacy in the democracy system is actually a positive development. Doesn't mean things aren't going to get rough. They are. That's inevitable one way or the other. But I think things are headed towards a rejection of this system. And it's most things work out a lot of times as really slowly, agonizingly slowly at first, and then really, really fast. Once they start cascading downhill, you start seeing just chain reactions. Things just blow up, just get crazy with people not going along anymore, governments collapsing, and then it's too late. Then you can't rush forward with a fake party and say they're going to change things. Come on, stay on board. Now people have just had enough. Again, it just takes one. If we really see a failure, like for instance, I pointed out France as a possible trigger point. If you really saw a collapse of the system in France, you could just see just a continent-wide collapse of these democracy countries. And you add to it the pressures of them basically trying to hype some kind of they're trying to distract people with this Russian war threat thing. You know, you can't throw us out. We're the only thing standing between you and Putler. It's ridiculous. And of course they can't help themselves. They can't just say, oh yes, no, don't look at us. Look over there. It's the evil Russians. They can't help it. They can't stop with that. They have to turn it into a money scam because they always have to turn it into a money scam. We're going to have to cut what few benefits you're getting and spend more billions of dollars on weapon systems that aren't actually ever going to appear. They're all just going to pocket the money. It's always a scam. They themselves are winding up adding more pressure on an already failing system. I don't know. We'll see. It's interesting time. We'll see how it all plays out. Anyway, we need to go ahead. We got to keep on rocking. Got to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment this week. So you too, get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. So let's jump right into it this week. We're going to look in the book of Hebrews chapter 10, verses 26 through 31. For as we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for judgment, fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sore punishment suppose ye shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified as an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the spirit of grace. For we know him that hath said, vengeance belongeth to me, I shall recompense, saith the Lord. And again, the Lord shall judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Now, as you know, I do this segment. This is geared towards people who are already Christian believers. I like to think of it, if I may be so humble, as an advanced course for already Christian believers. This isn't geared towards people who are just starting out. Not to say you can't get something out of it, but it is, you know, this is, I like to think this is more advanced stuff. This can be what we just read here. This can be a stumbling block even for folks who are further along in their faith, who are longer term believers. You read this and you're like, whoa, you know, this doesn't sound good. This sounds troubling. Couple this with the MCC message of basically nobody's going to hell and Jesus is about nothing but love, flowers. Chill out in peace, man. And this can be very confusing. So I want to go back through this because This shouldn't be a stumbling block, and it has to be understood clearly. And it's at the very first of what we've read that I think is what brings this into a position to where, you know, people have a hard time. People struggle with it. Now, I'm using the King James Version because, well, probably because I have some delusional view of myself as some crazy old West preacher wandering around the desert, a tattered frock coat, maybe a top hat. And of course, such a preacher would use the King James Bible. But basically, you're going to get the same thing regardless of what translation you use. So looking back at that first verse, "For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sin." Can't go back to the well. But if sin, if we have free will, and in that free will, sin is always a choice, and it is, then does this verse we just read, and basically coupled with everything we read after that, does this not imply that once you're saved, if you sin, you just went right back to the path of damnation? It says, if you sin willfully, well, we know that sin is a choice. I think I like to look at these things and figure them out. And I think you're better off addressing them headlong, because what can happen is you start creating a fake narrative in your head. You read something like that and it's hard to understand. Just at first glance, it looks like, well, if you sin after accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior, then you're condemned to hell because now you've trodden the sacrifice underfoot and there can be no hope for you. Death, sentence, hell. And you can start creating a narrative that you're not sinful. It says if you're sin willfully, well, then what do you do? You start trying to create a narrative in your mind that you're not actually sinning willfully. You see, it's unwillfully. It's an accident. You're not sinning because you choose to do so. No, there is an outside force. The devil made me do it. It's just, I didn't want to, but you see, as I was trying to cling to Jesus, I was dragged back to sin. And it wasn't my fault. This is the opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. We're always supposed to be looking at the truth. We're going through this process of examining our lives and looking at our choices and what we do and being real. I think it's important to think of it as the whole thing is we're going through judgment over spread out over time. We're going through the process now versus all at once after we die. So to sin willfully, what do we mean? What does it mean by this? If what they're talking about, I believe, what they're saying is what is written here. I'll spit it out here in a minute. Think of it as essentially the opposite. In other words, if you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior and truly take on what God, you know, truly accept him into your heart. And it's written elsewhere how you can tell, you know, people have undertaken the task. By their deeds, you will know them. You've taken up the cross. You've started this journey. That is a choice, and it is followed by concrete action. You do this, you're living the lifestyle. So it makes sense then to reject that, to willfully sin. To reject that is going to be the opposite. In other words, you throw all of that out. It doesn't mean, oh, you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and the next day you were hammering a nail, hit your thumb with the hammer, and started cussing up a storm and throwing the hammer and yelling, and now too late, you screwed it up, you're going to hell. It is the opposite. In other words, it's after accepting Jesus, then doing the opposite. It means making the choice to willfully reject Christ, the polar opposite of having accepted him. Let's go into this further. You accept Jesus and you decide to make that journey to know him. And then as you come to know him, you find him distasteful. Because when you start on this journey, as you go through this journey, and it, again, this segment is geared towards people who are already believers, who are on the journey. So I'm assuming here y'all know what we're talking about here. As you're on this journey, you do come to know Christ more. You come to understand him more. He comes closer to your heart where some of this stuff, a lot more and more of this stuff comes instinctually because you're growing closer to him. So you understand things more from his point of view as, you know, as you observe them. So you come to know the Lord. But what is warned here is there's some people that might, as they come to know him, they don't like him. They find him distasteful. They think about it, and the more and more they think about it, they would rather go and do what everyone else is doing. The difference I wanted to lay down here, and I really wanted to highlight when I thought we'd talk about this today, is there's a big difference. They're not, in other words, we're not talking about, when we read this, we're not talking about this process of, as I like to so colorfully put it, working through your shit, working through the process, figuring out why you do the things you're doing, you know, looking at your life and the decisions you're making. Why do you sin? Why are you making that choice? Owning up to it so that then you can work past it and grow even closer to Christ. That is the process. This is why the sacrifice was made, so that we would be able to go through this process without the sword of damnation hanging over our heads. We're going through this process. It's not what's being referred to here. Willfully sin doesn't mean, oh, the sins that you somehow didn't choose to do, because that can't be correct. I want to make that clear so no one can hear this and say, oh, well, you're just making it say what you want it to say. It wouldn't make any sense for the implication here to be anytime if you choose to sin, then you're condemned. Because every sin is a choice. If you think the sins you commit in your life are somehow the fault of somebody else, if you think the sins you commit in your life are because you're being influenced by an outside source and you just drug again, somebody kidnapped you. They put a bag. Satan and his demons showed up, stuffed a sack over your head, tied your hands behind your back, drug you off, and threw you into sin. Every sin you commit is a choice. And you got to get real about why you're choosing. You have to own up to it. This whole process is about breaking down your justifications that you start creating. And if you read this incorrectly, you'll start creating justification. Well, I didn't really willfully sin. I got confused. Whatever. The devil made me do it. You got to work through that process. Satan didn't put a bag over your head and dragging you off. So if willfully sin just meant you made the choice to sin, then it doesn't make any sense, because it makes what Christ did pointless. Because I guarantee you, every single person, including the apostles, including every saint that ever lived, has sinned. Only Jesus is without sin. So if you read that as anybody who chooses to sin, that's it. They're done. There's no more sacrifice for them. It wouldn't make any sense. So hopefully I am making sense in trying to spell this out. We're not redefining it to say what we want it to say is how I'm trying to put this. Because if you understood it as anybody who chooses to sin after accepting Christ is then condemned, then it doesn't make any sense. Sin is always a choice. So that doesn't make any sense. So we have to try to understand it. What is being discussed here, what is being referred to here, and what we've read in the Bible is a literal rejection of Jesus Christ. Is you come to Jesus, you do this whole, oh, I accept him as my Lord and Savior. And let's say you start partaking on the journey. And as you start to come to understand who he is, you don't like him. You reject him. You don't like him. You look around and you say, well, you know what? I think this other stuff is better. I think I would really rather just throw my lot in with the world and be like these other people, reject him, turn my back on him, expel him out of my life. This is what's being warned. Because once you've done that, you've rejected the sacrifice. There's not another one after that. It is the end, as it's written, once for all. He died once for all. He's not going back and being killed over and over again for you. Once for all. When you accept into that, and then you make the decision, I don't like it, I don't want it. And you prefer in your heart sin. I can't put too fine of a point on this, and you probably think, and you're probably right, I'm just belaboring the point, but I really believe this is really important. Going the opposite of what you're supposed to do. You've rejected him. You don't want anything to do. You pushed him out of your life after supposedly coming to him. A person who's never accepted him in the first place is better off than somebody who does that, because you've accepted him, you've received it, and then you said, no, I don't want it. There's nothing left after that. Now, you're not talking about working through, because this journey of working through your business, this journey of doing this, there's a lot of ups and downs. You go through, you all know, you go through spells when you feel really close to the Lord and you're just excited. You're feeling like, man, you're really getting a hang of this and you're really getting to know him, and you feel like you're undergoing some spiritual growth. And then you go through spells and it's like, it's just routine. It's like there's nothing new coming along here. Like you're stagnated. And you're like, well, I'm not really growing. You are. You think you're not, but you are. It's like taking growth spurts. You're just not in a growth spurt right now, but you keep at it and you'll come along. It's not that. There's times when you may backslide and you may just fall in with the world on things and start doing worldly things. But when your heart is still turned towards Jesus, in other words, you know it's wrong. Even when you're making the decision to do it, you know it's wrong. And you eventually come back around and get back on track. Look, that's everybody. Don't sit around and read this and go, well, that's it. And I started thinking like these worldly people, and I turned my back on God and started doing these things. And now I've read this and there's no hope. I want to turn to him, but now there's no hope because I turned my back on him. I started acting like all of these other assholes out here, and there's no hope for me because I turned my back on God and started doing worldly things after I accepted Jesus. No, you're just going through the process. If you had truly rejected him, willfully sinned, rejected him, you're not going to turn back around. You're going to turn back around and go, oh, now I want to find him and come back to him. That's not, no, we're talking about willfully rejecting him and saying, no, I don't like him. I don't want anything to do with him. Does that make sense? It's so easy to get confused and think that the process of working through your business here is willfully sinning and turning against him. This is why he came, so that we could do this. Like I said, even if you wind up hitting those areas where you fall in with the world and you quit putting in the work for a while, and then you figure out, what am I doing? I got to get back on track. You're still working. That's all a process of working through your business, of getting back on track. That's not what we're talking about here. If you willfully, it's like taking, if you took a big swig of something, you had a drink, and you take a swig of it, and you're like, oh, I don't like this, and you spit it out. You've expelled it out of your mouth. You're expelling him out of your life is what we're talking about here. Literally rejecting it, rejecting him. That's what's being referred to here. Anyway, hopefully that makes sense. Because there's verses that you can hit in the Bible that really can be a stumbling block. You read them and just at a passing glance, it's like, well, my gosh, this means I'm condemned. This means there's no hope for me because I willfully sinned. And you, like I say, you don't ever want to get into a situation where you start creating excuses for your sin. It's not really, it's not that I willfully, yeah, I sinned, but it wasn't willfully. Now you're going in the wrong direction. You have to always accept that you sin by choice. You're making the choice to do that. You're figuring out why you're making the choices to do that so that you can grow. You don't want to go in that's the backwards direction when you start trying to make up reasons of how it wasn't something. Because if you don't want to understand this, then the other option is to just say, well, I must be condemned because I chose to sin after having accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. That's not what's being referred to. What's being referred to here is literally rejecting him, finding him distasteful, not wanting anything to do with him after saying, yeah, I see who he is. I accept him as my Lord and Savior. The simplest way to remember, to know, to keep your confidence up, to not misunderstand these things when you come across them and not like go into a spiritual panic. Remember this. God always loves you, and I'm talking actual biblical love here, not this empty rhetoric that so much of the church is used now. God loves you more than you're ever going to love him. It's more than you can even hold. As long as you want to reach towards him, he's going to be there. In other words, there's not a point to where you haven't given up on God, but he's somehow given up on you. That's the easiest way to always reassure yourself. If you hit some snag and you start thinking, wait, what if he's not there? When the devil comes around and says, maybe he doesn't want to listen to you. Maybe he doesn't care anything about you. And maybe you're just wasting your time. Look, it is literally impossible for you to be in a situation where you have not given up on God, on seeking him, but he's given up on you. That makes you elevated over God. That would make you elevated over God. That would make you more loving than God. You're still seeking him, but you know what? You just sinned one too many times and now he's turned his back on you. It's impossible. Sorry. You're done for. That's not possible. That elevates you. That makes your love greater than his. You're still loving and seeking him, but he's had it with you. He's done with you. That's not possible. That's not possible. You're not going to find yourself in a situation where you're still seeking God, but he's not there for you. That is not to say your sin gets in the way. That's not to say you can't run into the consequences of sin and thus get to where you can't see clearly or whatever. He's not given up on you. That's just not possible. Anyway, I hope, in case that, if you ever come across reading that, or you have come across reading that in your Bible and it's been a stumbling block for you, I hope maybe we've reached some form of clarification today to help you understand that better, to get past that and not fall into, now I'm just going to create this lie that all these sins aren't actually my fault, because now you're sidetracked. Now you're turned around and you're going in the wrong direction. If it helps with that, then we've had a successful message today. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the show today, especially the Christian specific segments. Whole reason I do the show. I hope you got something out of it. And I do appreciate you stopping by with us this week. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Hope you have a chance to check out all of our content here on Radio Albion this week. And of course, as always, I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.